Tonight on Dateline.
I cried the whole time. I know that a lot of parents lose their kids.
Why would anybody shoot him?
My husband is walking the grudge in the end. Oh my God!
Somebody had killed a United States serviceman. There was blood smeared on different walls and on a vehicle inside.
He was a great father. He was always looking out for you.
We were kind of thinking as they had maybe had like a loan shark situation, like they had borrowed money from someone.
We live in a gambling town. Is he a gambler?
She was the first one to come in and really explain how it all had happened.
What I was asked to do did not involve anything to do with murder. I'm really afraid for my life.
It was chilling. Just almost more than you could bear as a human being.
I can't imagine what he went through.
He served his country and then was cut down in the prime of his life. This story needs to be told.
A haunting plot, a heinous crime, and a heartbreaking question. Why? I'm Lester Holt, and this is Dateline. Here's Keith Morrison with Part of the Plan.
Every bad guy that's ever lived is coming through Vegas at one point in his career.
As a homicide detective for Las Vegas Metro PD in Nevada, Todd Williams saw it all.
Whether you're a plumber or a policeman, you want to go where the work is, and there's lots of good police work here in Las Vegas.
Well, that's certainly one way to look at it.
Williams did the work for 30 years, never once sharing his cases with the media.
I've always refused these.
How come?
I just didn't feel like murder was entertainment or should be entertainment. That's the best way I could describe it.
Yeah.
So I've got my reasons for doing this now.
Reasons that perhaps will make sense once you hear the whole story. Which began for Todd Williams on a cold December night in 2010. In a family home on a quiet street, 13 miles and a world away from the Las Vegas Strip.
Oh my God, what's going on there?
Where horror had just come to call.
My husband is walking the grudge in the end. I need to calm down just a little bit. Oh my God!
The woman's husband was Nathan Payette, a U.S. Air Force airman.
He's bleeding out of his mouth.
Okay. Oh, is he awake? Is he talking to you? We need to start doing CPR right now.
Okay. Oh, he's wearing a military uniform. Oh, my.
He's in a military uniform?
Yes.
Get the uniform off.
Oh, God, he's shot in his stomach.
Okay, put him flat on his back.
The operator helped the woman perform CPR.
Faster, much faster.
With the couple's four children just a few feet away.
I don't know what your name is, but keep doing it, okay?
My name is Michelle.
Michelle, keep going. You're doing a good job, okay?
Michelle continued until the paramedics finally arrived and rushed Nathan to the hospital. They kept him alive, but it wasn't good. He'd been shot multiple times. Michelle pulled herself together and called Nathan's family, who lived thousands of miles away, in Guam. Her father-in-law picked up the phone, and then he called his wife. Nathan's mom, Carmelita Payette.
I was just getting ready to get off work.
I'm sorry.
You know, I was just like, what? And I told my co-workers I had to leave. So on my way home, I managed to call Michelle. She was hysterical. And I told her, I said, you know, you have to pray that, you know, he lives through this.
It was too late for prayers. By 12:49 a.m., Nathan Payette was dead. He was only 28 years old. Within the hour, Detective Williams and his partner, Detective Laura Anderson, were called to this new community called Mountain's Edge.
It was out in the middle of nowhere. Very remote location.
Wouldn't expect a lot of violent crime there.
Exactly. It was a quiet suburban neighborhood.
Not that night.
When I got there, the garage door was open and the lights were on in the garage. And when you walked in the garage, you could see a large amount of blood deep into the garage around a weight bench, a bench press.
Mm-hmm.
There was blood smeared on different walls and on a vehicle inside.
And a trail of blood that led into the house and ended at a bloody military uniform left behind on the floor.
And that struck me, that somebody had killed a United States serviceman.
The first responding officers filled them in. Looked like maybe a carjacking gone bad, they said.
Usually the information we're given initially most of the time is wrong. So we take that with a grain of salt.
Okay. Nathan's cell phone and car keys and wallet appeared to be untouched.
Nothing that we could tell was taken. Nothing from the garage. The vehicle was obviously not taken. It felt more deliberate simply because of the area we were in, the time of the night it took place. It just seemed more purposeful than just a carjacking.
Nathan Payette was targeted. Must have been. But by whom? So Detective Williams set out to canvass the neighbors. What did they see? Or hear?
It was kind of like a bang. Bang, bang, bang.
Somebody shot U.S. Air Force Airman Nathan Payette inside his own garage, just feet away from his wife, his children.
911 emergency.
We heard some gunshots.
Neighbors had called it in just seconds after they heard gunfire.
And how many shots did you hear?
I heard four. It was kind of like a bang, 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 bang.
We saw a car speed off, a black, sports car kind of.
And specifically, they saw the car start, the lights came on like most cars do automatically, and then the car lights went off and the car sped away. So that gave us the impression that that's something we needed to pay attention
to. Yeah, that'd make you perk up, all right.
Yes.
Meanwhile, more than 6,000 miles away in Guam, the Payette family waited for updates from the mainland.
So I called the hospital, and they couldn't really give me much information at the time.
By the time Carmelita finally got hold of Michelle, the news was as bad as news could be. Nathan didn't make it. They couldn't save him.
My heart didn't break. It was shattered.
She gave birth to that young man. She had to know what happened to him. Had to.
How did he get shot? Why would anybody shoot him? We knew that he wasn't involved in drugs. You know, who would want to actually do something to him like that?
So many questions. The same questions Detectives Williams and Anderson were asking Nathan's wife, Michelle, in their patrol car in the hours after Nathan was killed.
Along with me is Detective T. Williams.
Michelle told them Nathan worked a graveyard shift at Nellis Air Force Base to accommodate Michelle's work and school schedule. But that day, Michelle said, she left work early. She wasn't feeling well. And they all piled onto the living room couch, Michelle, Nathan, and the kids, and fell asleep. Until Michelle woke up. It was past 11 p.m.
I woke him up because I looked at the time and I told him he's late.
Okay.
You know, so he was rushing. He went upstairs and, you know, he got in the shower and did his thing. He got dressed. And then, you know, he walked downstairs.
And made his way to the garage to put his boots on before getting into his truck. It was parked in the driveway. That was his routine.
I hear the garage door open, so I lay down. You know, next to my daughter on the couch. And then I hear two bangs. and I didn't go outside. Oh, God, excuse me.
It's okay.
Because my kids got startled, so I just stayed there. And then I hear the door open to get into the house. And he just walks in, and he just drops.
Okay.
That is when Michelle called 911. About an hour later, Nathan was pronounced dead.
Now, I'm going to ask you some questions that are kind of sensitive in nature and they're personal, okay? But it's something that we have to do for our investigation, okay? What's the status of your marriage? Do you have a good marriage with him?
It's good, I mean...
Although they didn't see each other much during the week, said Michelle, they made sure the weekends were spent together as a family.
I love you!
His digital footprint proved it.
Even Michelle, she's bedridden now.
As detectives were finding out.
She's like, forget this place.
Does he have any kind of habits? What are his vices? And the only thing we could find was that he was a dedicated family man, loved his family, and there was nothing but pictures of his wife and kids on his phone. He was just a good guy. He was just a good man.
And when Detective Anderson asked Michelle about any extramarital affairs, Nathan had been faithful, she said, and so had she. In fact, she said they promised that if it ever crossed either of their minds, they'd talk about it first.
We've always told each other that if, you know, we're making each other unhappy or, you know, we feel that, you know, something's not there, and if you want to go out and venture off, then just let each other know.
She and Nathan were high school sweethearts. They'd been married for 8 years. The only thing she was guilty of was being flirtatious.
Is there anybody you flirted with?
No, there's nobody specific.
Michelle did say that she and Nathan were struggling financially.
You know, we were behind on our bills.
Michelle said she didn't believe Nathan owed anyone money. But some members of Nathan's family weren't so sure.
It was pretty evident, you know, that they were struggling financially. We looked
appalling.
In the pantry, we looked in the refrigerator. It was
pretty empty. There was almost no food.
Within hours of hearing her son Nathan was dead, Carmelita and her husband were on the way to the airport.
We needed to be there to help Michelle with the kids because we figured she'd be really totally out of it.
And then they sat on that airplane from Guam to Vegas, hours and hours and hours, helpless in their grief.
I cried the whole time.
How could you not?
Yeah, I know that a lot of parents lose their kids. You know, a lot of people have gone through the same pain. But it's something you don't want to even wish, even upon your worst enemy.
Nathan was Carmelita's youngest son, her baby boy, who everyone adored.
He loved to have fun. He loved to joke.
When Nathan's older brother, Eric, got married, he chose Nathan as his best man.
Well, it really wasn't a hard choice. He and I were really close growing up.
He made a little speech or something, didn't he?
Yeah.
Really happy for you guys. I'm gonna say, make each other laugh. You guys will be all right.
He definitely wasn't somebody with a lot of words. So it was a pretty short speech.
Those are often the best.
Exactly. You know, and it was really just about, you know, celebrating, you know, us and really what I really loved about it too was, you know, he truly welcomed Veronica, you know, to the family.
So here's to Eric and Veronica. I'm happy for you guys. Love you guys. Cheers.
Something that was ingrained in Nathan as a native Guamanian, or Chamorro, who was born and raised in Guam.
Take it away.
Where family is everything.
They just always want to be together.
I'm from
Veronica. It's amazing and it's beautiful, and I'm super fortunate to have had that as a part of my life.
They are married now.
Eric's wife, Veronica, felt a connection with Nathan and his wife, Michelle, almost right away.
Hi, baby.
By then, Nathan had joined the military and moved to the mainland, where he and Michelle seemed to be thriving as a couple.
They actually had a really good balance of taking care of each other and picking up where the other one just couldn't, or trying even harder, or providing more, whatever it was. Like, they were good about that.
In 2007, Nathan was assigned to Nellis Air Force Base in Las Vegas. There, Nathan and Michelle and their children were finally able to lay down some roots.
He did make a lot of new friends. He also was very instrumental in gathering a lot of the Chamorros. On Sundays, they would go to this park, and that ended up being a regular thing where they would get together there, barbecue, and the kids would play like ball, softball.
And just before he was deployed to Iraq in 2009, Nathan and Michelle bought a brand new home in Mountain's Edge.
Nice house?
Oh, yeah. It was really nice.
It was a nice upgrade for them, for sure.
It had a nice large kitchen, just enough room for, you know, the family to get together.
So when Nathan returned from deployment, so many gatherings were in order. But that first Thanksgiving back was going to be at Eric and Veronica's place in San Diego, California, a drive of more than 300 miles from Las Vegas.
You know, Nathan called me up and he said, you know, I'm sorry, we're not going to be able to come down this time. We just can't afford it. And so we didn't like that idea. So we went up there instead. Mm-hmm. And when we did, it was pretty evident, you know, that they were, you know, struggling financially. You know, we looked in the pantry, we looked in the refrigerator. There was pretty empty.
Like almost no food.
And things were tense between Nathan and Michelle.
You almost felt like they were just tolerating each other. And every now and then, he and I would step outside and try to have a conversation, just the two of us. And she would come out and kind of try to be in that conversation.
Didn't want you talking to him alone.
It absolutely felt like she did not want us to be, you know, able to speak alone.
When it was time to leave Las Vegas, Nathan made it a point to walk Veronica and Eric to their car to say goodbye.
He watched us drive all the way down the road. I could see him in the rearview mirror just standing there. And just knowing he had more to say and wanted to say something, but he couldn't.
A few days later, Nathan Payette was dead.
We went through every possible
scenario.
So many different scenarios.
Yeah. And,
I think the biggest one that we were kind of thinking was they maybe had, like a loan shark situation, had gotten out of control. Like they had borrowed money from someone and it went sideways.
So, was it a loan shark? Or something entirely different?
Could you describe your relationship with Michelle Payette?
It was the end of 2010. December, the coldest month of the year in Las Vegas. Zero resemblance to the island where Nathan Payette grew up riding the waves.
He loved swimming, and as he got older, he started into surfing. So, you know, a lot of times on weekends or even during the weekdays, he would just go with his friends and they'll, you know, do their surfing.
Good at it?
It was pretty good, yeah.
Guam was home, and Carmelita, who'd just landed in Vegas to help Michelle with the kids, was planning to make arrangements to bring Nathan's body back with her.
To me, he had to come back to Guam.
Michelle, still barely holding it together, met her in-laws at the Vegas airport.
When I got to her, you know, I had to be the one to really hug her to keep her from falling.
That very same day, as Michelle was falling into the arms of her mother-in-law, detectives were working a lead Michelle herself had given them just hours after the murder.
Do you know of anybody that owns a black car?
I asked her if she knew anybody that had a black car simply because some of the witnesses had seen a black car leaving.
One of my coworkers.
Which one would that be?
Michael.
Michael Rodriguez. They worked together at a telemarketing company.
What's your relationship with Michael?
Just coworkers. He was one of the people I flirted with, but that was it.
We went to the business address that Michelle Payette said that she worked with Michael Rodriguez. And when we got there, in the parking lot was a black Cadillac.
So they waited, watching, for 4.5 hours. And finally, a man matching Michelle's description of Michael Rodriguez got into the Cadillac and drove away. So they pulled the car over.
Todd Williams?
Yes, Major.
And the man, who confirmed he worked with Michelle, agreed to come into the station.
Any questions you guys have, I'm more than happy to answer.
He admitted straight out he was a convicted felon. He'd served time for attempted forgery and theft, but he was working now and was engaged to be married. And seeing other women, too. Lots of women. And that included his co-worker, Michelle Payette.
We have had, per se, I don't know how you'd word it. A little bit more than friends because, you know, she's cried to me, I've cried to her at times.
Michael said Michelle would complain to him about not feeling loved in her marriage. There was also money trouble. Michelle and Michael bonded.
Has it ever been sexual?
We've joked about it, yeah, but no.
Detective Williams had heard enough to know he had to find out where Michael Rodriguez was the night Nathan was killed. And Michael said he was at a Walmart looking for love or something like it, which is how he found Shannon.
You eyeball her, she eyeballs you, you eyeball, you start talking.
And one thing led to another, and they ended up at the Sunset Station Hotel and Casino before midnight.
We got to the door and clothes came off.
Michael told the detectives he'd been drinking that night. Couldn't be exact on his times, but that Shannon would verify his story. So he gave them her cell number, and detectives, listening from another room, called Shannon.
She didn't have to think about it. She knew exactly where she was and what she was doing when she was with him.
She backed him up. So then they called the hotel and discovered Michael did check in that night, but the check-in time he'd given them was off. The detectives didn't confront him about that, not yet. First, they needed to look at the hotel's security video. But there was something else, maybe important. Michael said he and Michelle had been in touch that day.
We had talked privy to her going home because she was feeling sick and I kept telling her to go home that day.
By then, Detective Anderson had Michelle's saved text messages from that same night. Michelle had given her permission to search her cell phone. But they didn't make a lot of sense. So maybe Michael could explain a text that he sent Michelle at 11:12 p.m.? Hope you are feeling better. Just about done with Van Dyke's contract for tomorrow. He's a pain in the ass.
If you're messing around with Shannon, why are you talking about a contract with Van Dyke with Michelle?
Well, because honestly, Michelle's having a lot of money trouble, and I'm trying to get money into her pocket.
At 11:24 p.m., Michelle texted Michael.
And she says, I can't go to sleep right now. Got woke up from a man screaming I'm late. He's rushing out the door.
Okay.
That's what happened 6 minutes later.
I don't know.
Her husband shot in the garage and killed. And what I find interesting, Michael, is that you haven't asked us one single time why you're here.
As a female detective, you get men that look at you like, well, you're just some stupid lady. Why are you talking to me? And that was what he started to do to me, which really did not set well with me.
You may talk your way out of here tonight, but I'm coming after you. I know you killed Nathan, and you can book me all you want, but you know I'm right. You will see me again. Guarantee that.
My friend, she's just as right as rain, Mike.
Bottom line is I didn't kill that man.
Who did?
I don't know.
Don't think,
Detectives didn't believe Michael Rodriguez. But they didn't have enough evidence to arrest him.
You're free to go.
It was time to talk to Michelle again. It was going on a week after Nathan Payette was shot to death in his own garage. The U.S. Air Force held a memorial for Nathan. His brother Eric spoke.
He believed in his family. He believed in what he could do.
Family and friends filled the pews. But one person, one very significant person, was missing. Michelle Payette. Early in the investigation, detectives had asked Michelle to take a lie detector test, but she'd refused and told Carmelita about it.
I said, Michelle, if you have nothing to hide, then you should just go do it now. Get it over with.
The morning of Nathan's memorial, detectives called Michelle and asked her to come into the station. And this time, Carmelita, who was there when the call came, made sure Michelle had someone to take her to the station.
Go ahead and sit down, Michelle.
And when she got there...
I just want to get on with my life after this and raising the kids.
I understand.
A story came pouring out.
First it started out just smoking and everything, you know, just talking.
That is how, she said, her relationship with Michael Rodriguez began. And no, it wasn't as innocent as she'd made it out to be.
He told me I was beautiful. He told me, you know, that I was a great person and everything like that. And, you know, you like to hear stuff like that because after a while, you know, in a marriage, you know, you don't hear stuff like that all the time.
And it wasn't long before they began having sex. Then one night, said Michelle, she and Michael were hanging out in his car, drinking, and she vented about Nathan.
I was telling him, like, man, I'm so tired of, you know, my husband's paychecks are not cutting it.
Then, she said, Michael seemed to get an idea. He pointed out to Michelle that Nathan must have a military life insurance policy.
And he goes, well, you know, you can get rid of your husband.
With her husband gone, Michelle stood to benefit $650,000.
And I said, don't say that. Don't think like that.
But her story? Michael ignored her objections. And on December 1st, he put his plan into action.
What was Michael's plan?
He just said, my friend is going to, you know, take care of everything. We're going to handle everything and you have nothing to do with it.
The plan, she said, was to make it look like a robbery gone bad. Michelle had only one job to do, unlock Nathan's truck, so that Michael and a second person could enter, wait inside, and kill Nathan inside the truck. She said she went along with it, but secretly tried to sabotage the plot. She didn't unlock Nathan's truck as directed. Instead, said Michelle, she turned off her husband's alarm to intentionally make him late for work, and that way he wouldn't be outside when someone came to shoot him. And remember those work-related texts on Michelle's phone that Michael couldn't quite explain? Just about done with Van Dyke's contract? Michelle spelled it out.
Now, would the contract be code for contract on your husband?
Yes.
To kill your husband?
Yes.
But Michelle swore she was doing everything she could to make sure the contract wouldn't be carried out.
I waited till like 11:15 to wake up my husband. You know, I was like, okay, they're going to leave, like, if he doesn't come out.
In fact, she said she thought maybe Michael had left. And so she sent him another text. My husband just woke me up, and he's trying to rush out the door. I guess he's late, LOL. Sorry, that contract is a pain.
That meant, you know, I was trying to save my husband.
Detectives weren't buying it. To them, those text messages seemed like proof Michelle was very much a part of the plan.
So that's a sign. Okay, he's leaving now. Get ready.
Exactly.
Minutes later, Nathan Payette was dead. But did they arrest Michelle? No, they did not. They let her go, just like Michael Rodriguez.
We have to be able to have all of our ducks in a row before we make any arrests.
They may destroy evidence. They may, you know.
That's the chance that we take.
But about half an hour later, Michelle was escorted back in after telling a police officer right outside she wanted to hurt herself.
I think in a moment of desperation, she wanted to throw herself in front of traffic.
Michelle was transported to a nearby hospital and put on a 72-hour psychiatric hold. Meanwhile, someone else was walking into the police station. And what a story she would tell.
But I'm really afraid for my life. And you don't need to be. You really don't need to be, okay?
Just go ahead and sit right here.
No, right over here, sir.
Remember Shannon, the young woman Michael Rodriguez hooked up with night of the murder? She was his willing alibi, first time detectives talked to her on the phone. It wasn't long before Shannon realized she'd been duped, and she could not stay quiet. So she went to the police station to tell her story.
What I was asked to do did not involve anything to do with murder.
On Wednesday, December 1st, Shannon said she went over to her friend Jessica's apartment.
She says she doesn't give me any information other than if the cops ask you, you were with Michael tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, Jessica, what are you talking about? Is someone getting hurt? And she says, no, they're just going to rob a heroin dealer.
Meaning Michael and a man named Corey Hawkins, Jessica's boyfriend. Shannon was doing drugs that night, so her memory, she said, was fuzzy. But at some point in the night, she remembered Jessica starting a fire and Michael and Corey rushing into the apartment.
They take off their clothes. He's like, bitch, get your
who says this? Who says this?
This is Michael. And I look at Jessica and I'm like scared. I'm scared. She's like, go. So I get in his car.
Shannon left with Michael, leaving Jessica and Corey behind in the apartment with the clothes they'd taken off burning in the fireplace.
And he starts spitting out all these crazy things. He's like, if anyone asks for my girlfriend, we were together this night, tonight.
Shannon said Michael made it clear to her that she was his alibi for whatever he was up to. Then, she said, they drove to the Sunset Station Hotel and checked in.
We're holding hands, and he was, like, cuddling with me, and I thought that was weird. Like, he was doing it to be seen on camera.
And they were. The detectives finally had the security video, and it showed that Shannon and Michael arrived after midnight.
As we found out, he had enough time to commit the murder and to be at Sunset Station, where he ended up with Shannon.
The next day, Shannon got that call from the detective and said exactly what Michael told her to say. But then the detective said something that made her panic.
He was investigating a murder, and that's when I lost my mind.
After that call, said Shannon, she had to know. So she saw Michael again.
He admits to me that he murdered a co-worker's husband.
Michael says this?
Yes.
Okay.
Michael told Shannon his co-worker was a battered wife. By Michelle's own admission, Nathan never laid a hand on her.
It sounded like to me that he had a relationship with this woman,
mm-hmm.
and that she was in on it too, because he kept talking about all the money she was going to get, and he thinks he pulled one over on me and everyone else, but he didn't. Like, he needs to pay for what he did.
Later that night, detectives arrested Michael Rodriguez, along with Shannon's friend, Jessica Austin, and Jessica's boyfriend, Corey Hawkins. They arrested Michelle a couple of days later, when she was released from the hospital.
What did they do?
You have the right to remain silent?
The detective spoke to Michelle one more time.
I don't know what to tell you. It's okay. I did have part to do with it. And I'm not going
to
lie, because...
Michelle, part to do with it? You had everything to do with this. If you could have stopped this, you're the only one in the entire world.
And I tried to.
Five years later, Michael Rodriguez went to trial, and Shannon was the star witness.
He admitted to me that he shot a man.
Michael did not have the specific...
But Rodriguez's defense attorney told the jury it was Corey Hawkins who killed Nathan Payette.
There's no other evidence that the state has presented that Michael was the actual shooter.
When the jury got the case, it didn't take long to reach a verdict.
Guilty of first-degree murder with use of a deadly weapon.
Guilty of first-degree murder and conspiracy. He was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. Next was Michelle Payette. At the very last minute, she pleaded guilty to first-degree murder and conspiracy. The Payette family asked the death penalty be taken off the table.
The Chamorro culture, we don't get to play God.
Right. Eye for an eye wasn't necessarily what we wanted. I mean, I think for her to know that her family was going to move on without her, that her kids were going to grow up knowing what had happened, that was, I guess, more satisfying than the death penalty.
The day she was sentenced, Michelle addressed the court.
I made a huge mistake and a really bad choice, and I'm so sorry.
Michelle was sentenced to life without parole. Corey Hawkins received the same sentence after he pleaded guilty to first-degree murder and conspiracy. And in exchange for her cooperation, Jessica Austin was offered a deal. She pleaded guilty to the lesser charge of conspiracy. She was given probation. It's the case Detectives Anderson and Williams told us they still can't quite get over.
To find out that his own wife had caused that was just almost more than you could bear as a human being.
It's the reason Detective Williams decided to speak with us. To tell Nathan's story exactly how it happened so that everyone knows the truth, especially his children.
I would like them to know, as sad as it is, what their mother did. It would bother me a great deal if she pretended to her children or to her family that she was just an innocent bystander in all of this, and she was not.
You became parents all over again.
Yep.
Nathan's parents took custody of the children.
Why did you decide to do that?
I think Nate would have wanted it. You know, he always said he wanted the kids to be close to us and he wanted to raise them on Guam. I just felt like it was the right thing to do.
And every so often, Carmelita and the kids stop by Nathan's gravesite on the island.
They take turns going up and, you know, to say their prayers and to tell him what's going on with them.
and for Carmelita, too. A moment to visit with her son, who was back home on the island he loved so much.
That's all for this edition of Dateline. We'll see you again Friday at 9, 8 Central. And of course, I'll see you each weeknight for NBC Nightly News. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, good night.